Inside Security Podcast with Martin and Steve Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joseph's there and sparkles while the vet's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
Hello and welcome to the Southern Fried Security Podcast. It's episode number 181. I am your host, Joseph Sicoli. The season outside has turned to summer. The humidity has ramped up here in beautiful Baltimore. But as we wait with bated breath, at the start of the summer always comes WWDC. And what comes along with WWDC, you know, Apple's premier developer event? Well, that means it's time for Guillaume Ross to join us again on the Southern Fried Security Podcast. Guillaume, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you. About yourself?
I can't complain. We've made it through the most humid weekend, and now we're into one of those really nice weeks that we get here. How's the weather up in Kanakistan?
I think it's going to rain every day until Sunday, which is perfect because it's a Formula One weekend, and we don't want too much rain on Sunday.
Well, excellent, excellent. So Guillaume is a longtime friend of the podcast. We've had you here a couple of times. We had you here last year, post-WWDC. But this year, WWDC actually falls, I think it's about a week later than it was last year. And so with the way that the podcast scheduling worked out, you actually reached out to me and said, hey, how about we talk about kind of what's coming up in WWDC? What are some of the security and privacy implications of some of the changes that we've seen, either rumored or what we have on our wish list for the year? And I thought that would be a great idea. So why don't I go ahead and get things kicked off? We've already started to see some rumors out of folks at 9to5 Mac, and as well, we've seen some stuff out of Fortune as well regarding some Touch ID changes for device security. On the iOS side of things, we've seen Apple file a couple of patents talking about instead of having a dedicated button for Touch ID, we will actually have instead some sort of biometrics straight from the screen, which seems interesting, particularly with how fast the Touch ID sensor is on the new iPhone 6S. I don't know if I'm really looking for a particular Touch ID change on iOS. How about yourself?
Well, I think it doesn't really make a difference if the Touch ID is behind the screen or behind a button. What's really important is because the overall device can be smaller, you know, especially with ever increasing sizes of these phones, you know, if there can be less space around the screen wasted for buttons and Touch ID and all of that, I think that'd be great, you know, assuming they can be as efficient, as fast, and as secure as before.
That's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that. Now, the Touch ID change that I'm really interested in that we've actually heard rumored so far, Mark Gurman broke the story because, of course, he did. He's Mark Gurman. But the idea is there are rumored Touch ID coming to the new MacBook Pros. I don't know about you, but I've been wanting Touch ID on my MacBook Pro ever since I had the iPhone 5S, which had the Touch ID sensor. Not typing passwords on any of my iOS devices is fantastic. I love the idea of bringing Touch ID to the Mac. How about yourself?
I think on the Mac, it would obviously be very useful, not just for logging in and out of the Mac itself, but you think about third-party application support, like, for example, 1Password. You know, I can't even count the amount of times I would log into 1Password in one day on my iPhone. And if you remember, prior to Touch ID, if you had a really good password on 1Password, which you definitely should have, that used to take a lot of time out of your day if you'd unlock 1Password, you know, 30, 50 times a day. Obviously, on a laptop with a full keyboard, it's not as bad, but I still think it'd be really, really useful.
Yeah. Now, what really interests me as far as having Touch ID on the Mac is on iOS devices, we've seen that there's a specific offboard chip, if I remember correctly, that is the secure enclave, right? All of the biometric data is stored there. It's not stored as part of the rest of the system, to the best of my understanding. And one of the other things is, obviously, you can't enable Touch ID without having a passcode enabled. And when you activate a passcode on iOS, it automatically encrypts the entire disk. Now, up until now, Apple hasn't required you to do any particular disk encryption, although it's been built in on Mac. And the disk encryption there is pretty good as far as I know. So what I'm really interested to see is if we see Touch ID, does that therefore require that there will become some sort of secure enclave on the MacBook Pros? And if so, like, what sort of implications would that have for users? Do you have any thoughts there?
Well, I think, first of all, when it comes to the secure enclave, I guess the question is, if they're going to do this soon, does that mean they would be using Intel's technology, like Intel SGX or something like that? Or is it actually going to come maybe a little later when they finally release a MacBook that has an ARM CPU, where they could actually do the secure enclave by themselves, like they do on iOS? I guess the trick is, if they're looking to target MacBook Pros, I think these would be the last laptops to get an ARM chip, you know, simply for performance reasons. So I don't really know what's going to happen there. Or maybe are they going to make some software to allow you to unlock your Mac using the Touch ID on your phone? You know, that's also something that that could happen, you know, using Bluetooth or NFC or any other type of technology they could implement. Now, when it comes to FileVault, I think definitely we should have FileVault enabled by default on all OS X systems coming out of the box. You know, you should have to go out of your way to disable that. Right now, that's not how it works. There's probably, you know, legacy reasons for that. You know, people are used to being able to troubleshoot Macs and PCs, connecting drives elsewhere and all of that. But I think that world is pretty much over now. So these devices should be encrypted out of the box. Now, on a Mac, it's more like full disk encryption. On iOS, you know, I prefer calling it full device encryption, which is slightly different. And I guess probably they could find a way to get Intel SGX to be the enclave that would store the information for Touch ID, so it doesn't have to remain on the disk itself. But you know, I'm not an expert at the low level stuff. I just know that it was an issue for a long time. You know, Intel didn't necessarily have a direct equivalent to the secure enclave, so I don't know if SGX would finally let them do that.
That's an interesting thought. I hadn't thought about the particular architectural changes that would need to take place. So that's interesting.
I guess we'll know eventually, but probably not next week, since there seems to be no hardware announcements coming up. So probably more of a, you know, September thing.
It'd be interesting to see. So now that we've kind of gotten the rumors out of the way, there haven't been any particular other security or privacy related rumors that we've seen so far. I wanted to kind of dive in. You mentioned that you had a bit of a wish list for iOS security and privacy changes.
Yes, I do. And most of these are not, you know, low level hardcore security features, which are super important, obviously, but probably better left to others. These are more user-facing features that I think would be important. And in fact, the first one in my list was also kind of rumored for iOS 9.3. There had been some information leaked about that feature possibly being available, but then that wasn't super clear. And it's simply just encrypted iCloud backups, right? Everyone is backing up to iCloud. And, you know, by everyone, I mean just a whole lot of people. Most people who use iOS probably back up to iCloud. And those backups are not encrypted, or at least if they're encrypted, it's like data at rest encryption. They're not encrypted with something that you as a user control. So my problem with that is just that, first of all, it makes it pretty easy for someone like law enforcement to get to these backups, which, as discussed, you know, over and over in the last few months, can contain data such as iMessage. You know, iMessage is encrypted end-to-end. But what good is that if your iCloud backups are not encrypted, or if the person you're communicating with has iCloud backups enabled and they're not encrypted, right? So I think that would be extremely useful. In fact, I'm sure there's a lot of people who still back up to OS X just so they can encrypt the backups in iTunes. It would probably start using iCloud if they could do that. It would also be cool, I think, if it was a little bit more granular, so you could select apps that you want or don't want to back up. Maybe just create a blacklist. You say like, okay, iMessage, I don't want to back that up. You know, HealthKit, there's some stuff in there that is actually not migrated over when you change your device if you're backing up to iCloud. And I'm sure they want that to be backed up eventually. So they're probably waiting for a feature like that to come on over. And while they're at it, it would be great if iCloud also did client-side encryption, you know, iCloud Drive specifically. You know, Dropbox would be dead to me if iCloud Drive could do client-side encryption really well, simply because, you know, no one cares about the web version of iCloud. since they control all the clients, I think that would probably be something that's that is doable. And once they have that, you know, what's to keep them from then offering, let's say, iCloud backup for OS 10, you know, encrypted backups in iCloud, like so many third parties offer. But for the typical user who doesn't necessarily want to get a third party piece of software and another account with someone else, I think that'd be a pretty interesting feature. Also, what do you think?
I think that'd be really good. I particularly like the idea of, you know, it is kind of a hassle to have to bring all of your iOS devices to one central place, sync them over with iTunes just to get a good backup that's also encrypted.
Yeah.
I love the idea of that sort of fire and forget iCloud backup, you know, as long as I knew that it was encrypted all the way up on their end.
Yeah, with something that you control, right? Because what I'd be concerned about is not just, you know, what can happen on their end, but what if, you know, you have to factor whatever. What if one of your sessions was stolen or someone manages to break into your account? I really don't want someone to be able to restore my phone on their phone because there's a lot of stuff on my phone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So now kind of tying into encrypted iCloud backups, you shared with me kind of a document, and one of the things that you mentioned a lot was kind of this increased permission granularity, both with locations and then also with stuff like the clipboard or with photos. What are you kind of looking to see there?
Right. So I think that the most important one is photos. So one thing that we've seen over the last few years with iOS is permissions are there to say, allow an application to read this type of data, let's say your calendar, your contacts, or your location. Mm-hmm. Some of these did not exist in the early days of iOS. And the way that a lot of these eventually started appearing in new versions of iOS was just someone exploited that and just went too far. And I think that one of them that is still not granular enough is definitely photos. If, for example, you're using Skype on iOS and you want to save a photo, you just want to save one single photo that was sent to you via Skype or that was put in a group chat that you're on in Skype. To do that, you need to give Skype access to your photos. Not give Skype access to save photos, but give Skype access to your photos, right? So maybe you want to do that with Skype because sometimes you send other people photos, but do you want to do that with every single photo that you want to save something from? I don't really think that makes sense. And considering people are keeping all of their photos on iCloud photos or on their phones, I think if we don't have separate read and write permissions, and if we don't have a photo picker that's sandbox, you know, allowing me to select a photo without giving an application full access to my photo library, I think it's just a matter of time before, you know, some free game like or a ripoff of another game or something like that starts uploading a lot of photos to a cloud service somewhere and people don't notice until it's too late. You know, I know I feel a little bit uneasy about granting some of these applications access to my photos. Is that something, like, do you feel that way?
Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought about it until you kind of framed it that way. But as an example, the Facebook app, which is well known for being super hinky, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that in some of the other little permission things as well. But the Facebook app, occasionally when you open it, it says, hey, do you want to post any of these recent pictures that you just took? And it's like, I let it have access once a while back, and then I haven't even thought about it since then. Until all of a sudden I see all of these photos popping up that all I have to do is click a button and it would automatically, you know, upload those straight up into right. Facebook.
Right. And with, you know, everyone having multiple social media apps on their phones, multiple instant messaging app on their phones. I mean, Google releases a chat application every 2 weeks, right? How can anyone keep up? If the photo picker at least was sandboxed, kind of like how the document picker is, right? I mean, you can have an app and open a photo open a document from, let's say, iCloud Drive or Dropbox or whatever, that doesn't grant this application access to everything that you have in there. So I think for photos, that would be a big win, but also write access. And a similar one to me is the clipboard permissions. You know, right now, applications have access to your clipboard on iOS, even if you don't paste.
Right.
So that's a convention that I feel like is coming from the PC and Mac world, where it just made sense and people built so much automation around like clipboard managers and all of that. But nowadays, what's in my clipboard? Passwords. Mm-hmm. Every day I'm using one password. I'm copying passwords everywhere. I'm logging in to different applications by pasting that password in because they don't have an extension for it or whatever. And people copy and paste a lot of, you know, very sensitive information in there. And I think if you're not the one who's actively pressing the paste button, applications should have to request access to your clipboard to be able to read what's in there, right? Because Right. Even if you can set 1Password to wipe your clipboard after 90 seconds or whatever, that doesn't mean that every password manager behaves like that. That doesn't mean that this is the default setting. And that also doesn't mean that passwords are the only thing you have in your clipboard that you don't want some, you know, free pay to play in-app purchase game to be able to read, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's such a convenient little feature, the fact that apps can kind of pick up on your clipboard here and there. I know I use it a lot in things like deliveries, for example, but having some granularity there. Now, do you happen to know, is that sort of granularity something that exists on, say, Android, for example?
I'm not enough of an expert of the permissions on Android, but I have a feeling, let's just say, that it's not very restrictive compared to what already exists on iOS. I know they've improved it a lot in the last 2 years, and I didn't really stay up to date on that. So, you know, I can't say for certain. But your deliveries example is great. That's an app that you bought and you trust it to read your clipboard because you would typically copy a tracking number before going in there.
Right.
That's the kind of thing where you want to say, yes, you can read my clipboard. I have no issue with that. But when I open up a social networking website, I don't want it to be able to read my clipboard. You know, what if you have an email address in there and some social network just invites that person because you can read it there? You know, I'm sure you have at least one app on your phone where that scenario doesn't sound far-fetched at all, right? There mm-hmm. are some social networks out there that do a lot to try and get you to invite everyone that you know by mistake, right?
Not pointing any fingers at like LinkedIn, for example.
I didn't say anything.
So while we're talking about kind of granular access in general, one of the other things on your list was location access. And this is a big one. This is one of those things that it's kind of amazing that we haven't gotten to that point already having this sort of granular location access. Right. But that said, it has gotten better over time. For example, I got a prompt, I think it was yesterday or something along those lines, where I had recently reinstalled Fantastical. Mm-hmm. And it asked me, hey, is it okay that Fantastical still uses your location in the background for things like travel time to events and stuff like that? So I hadn't even thought about the fact that I had reinstalled it and I had re-given it location permissions. But iOS occasionally will kind of re-prompt you on those sort of location things. But you're looking for a little more, right?
Well, so that's granularity on when can an app use your location, right? So mm-hmm. if an app was built recently, then sometimes you might say, I want this app only to have my location when it's running, or I want it to have it all the time. Which, for example, if you're using something like Google Now or Fantastical, that's supposed to tell you, hey, you should really be getting in your car if you want to make it to the airport in time for your flight. Obviously, it needs that kind of access. What I'm looking for is granularity on the precision of the information that's given to these applications, simply because there's so many apps where them having the city where I'm in is extremely useful, but them knowing exactly where I am adds nothing to the functionality. So just to give you an example, if you're looking to book a flight, mm-hmm. you know, there's one international airport in my city. Why does it need to know exactly where I am right now? You know, it makes no difference. If I want to go see a movie, maybe it needs to know in what city I am so it can tell me what theater is the closest, but it definitely doesn't need to know exactly where I am. So I think it would be great if we just had a slider that says, for this app, I wanted to know what country I'm in, or maybe what time zone and country I'm in, what city I'm in, or just specify a radius, you know, within 25 kilometers or what is that, like 16 miles or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Crazy measurement. So I think that would be really useful. I would feel a little bit more comfortable sharing my location with more applications if I had that type of granularity, right?
Hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. That's something I know. I'm pretty sure I have not heard anything about that from any other operating system. So that would be really interesting.
Right. And, you know, other operating systems that would be Android, I guess, on the operating systems on like Mac and PC, obviously location services are becoming a bigger thing, but, you know, they don't have GPS. They do a whole lot of stuff based on Wi-Fi, and people just don't use as many apps and services that benefit from knowing where you are as they do on something like iOS. So I think to push it forward, I think that would be a great feature.
Excellent point. So speaking of airlines, like you mentioned in your little example, a lot of airlines nowadays have a little USB port hidden somewhere near your seat so that you can charge USB devices such as phones and tablets and things like that.
I thought that was for making the plane fly sideways.
Well, it's also for that, but it's also for charging your phone. So one of the security things that you were looking for, and I actually ran into this last night. I was picking up a phone that I had lent to somebody. I was picking it back up, and the pairing, so the do you trust this computer, does this computer trust this phone, the handshake was never establishing quite right and just kept asking over and over again. So you were looking for kind of a better way to prevent pairing and have some control over that access, right?
Right. So there's two things I'm looking for here. The first one is I don't want my phone to trust other people's computers ever, right? The second thing is I don't even want to see that prompt, right? Because if you see the prompt, you might hit yes by mistake. And now if you do, I don't know if you ever had to undo a pairing that you established by mistake. That happened to me once. I was connecting. I said yes. I disconnected USB really quick. And then you have to reset your network settings, which is not super convenient considering it comes with like Wi-Fi settings and passwords and all of that. Now, with Apple Configurator, if you set your device to supervised, or if you're doing that with MDM in an enterprise environment, what you can do is you can prevent iTunes pairing on devices you manage. So for example, if you're a home user, you're just pretty security conscious, what you can do is install Apple Configurator on a Mac, prevent the pairing, then the only device that will have the keys to sync your phone is going to be the Mac on which you run Apple Configurator. It's the only one that's going to have the keys. Then when you connect your phone elsewhere, it's just going to use that for power. It's not even going to prompt you to trust the device. Now, I just think that it's not really user-friendly for someone who doesn't necessarily have a Mac, first of all, right? We know a lot of people have iOS devices. Not a whole lot of people have OS X devices. Not everyone knows how to install Configurator. And most of all, setting your phone to supervised means you have to wipe it. And the reason for that is just simply they don't want you to be able to supervise a device you don't necessarily own or to start managing data on a device you didn't own before. So that makes sense. But that's not really user-friendly. I mean, the great advantage is if you stole my phone out of my hands, completely unlocked, you would still be unable to back it up to iTunes just because that profile is installed and is preventing that. And if you want to remove the profile, you have to wipe my phone, right?
Right.
That's the best level of security you can get right now. But I still think it would be great if there was a setting just to say, never prompt me to trust computers again, right? So when you connect it to your real computer, you say trust, or maybe you say, this is my home. This is the only computer I want to trust, or you turn off a toggle that says, don't trust other computers or something like that. And then it just doesn't ask you again. It's just like such an annoying prompt to get, and the security implications if you actually accidentally trust something are pretty big, right? Someone could just back up your device.
That's an interesting thought. So finally, as we're kind of coming towards the close here, one of your final points, better Wi-Fi, VPN, and SSL and TLS handling. Yes, please.
Yeah, again, you know, by default, iOS will prompt you to accept, for example, a certificate that's not trusted for an IMAP-S connection. When you're on the hotel Wi-Fi, let's say in the captive portal, like, why would I ever want to use my email on an untrusted certificate when it was working fine before without that untrusted cert? Like, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that the certificate would change all of a sudden while I'm connected to a Wi-Fi network I've never been on before, right? So that's something that I would like them to improve. The other thing is just, you know, sometimes the captive portals don't necessarily behave the right way. And if you have a VPN that's set to connect automatically that prevents you from getting to the captive portal, then you have to disable your VPN, open up, let's say, your local newspaper website so the captive portal prompt goes up, then you agree to all their stupid terms, and then you re-enable your on-demand VPN. I know not all of that is, let's say, iOS's fault,
Right.
But as a user, I don't care. You know, if I set my iPhone to always connect to VPN, it should still be able to reach those captive portals if there's a way to do it. And if not, you know, why don't you at least put the VPN toggle in Control Center? Mm-hmm. We have the, like, have you ever used the calculator from Control Center?
Very rarely.
Like, I would use VPN from Control Center way more than the calculator. Like, I would trade it any time of the day. And, you know, while we're talking about Control Center, another great security feature that I think they could add to it would be for AirDrop.
Mm-hmm.
What do you leave AirDrop configured as usually? Do you leave it to...
off.
Okay, so you leave it to off. I typically leave it to contacts only on my iPad and then to off on my iPhone. But I never want to leave it to everyone, right?
Right.
Not only because anyone could send me thumbnails of crazy stuff, right? You just know you don't want to give random people access to showing images on your devices, right? That's like rule number one of the internet. But the second thing is discoverability. You know, I don't want everyone in the bus to be able to see my name in there and all of that. But sometimes someone wants to send me something. I'm right next to them. I don't have them in my contacts. I just want to turn it on, set it to everyone, then I get the file and I turn it off. Why isn't there just a button that says AirDrop discoverable for 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Right? And then 5 minutes later, it's back to your previous setting.
Yeah, that would be really useful.
Yeah, I think that would be a really, really easy to add, really simple feature. So those were all, you know, user facing. There's other annoyances like, you know, iCloud password pop-ups that I hope go away because it make phishing easier and easier. Being more ruthless against apps that gather so much data, especially, you know, app analytics and advertising analytics that just upload everything. I think the keyboard permission model where it's nothing or everything is also a little bit weird. And, you know, most of all, make them harder to jailbreak. I think that's a great security win for everyone. Though I got to say, as someone who sometimes does some research on iOS, if I couldn't jailbreak any of my devices, that would make a lot of things much harder. So I think as we get to the point where it's harder and harder to jailbreak, maybe I would love some kind of developer feature you can maybe only enable via Xcode or something like that so we can take a peek at the internals. So
it would be
interesting. I guess we'll see next week what happens.
Yeah. Now, out of this list, do you have any that you think are pretty likely to come?
I think if I had to choose one, probably the iCloud backup stuff.
Yeah.
And it's one of the best ones. I think it's one of those that would have the best impact for Apple and users. It's also one of the most complicated ones to pull off at scale. But I think they have the back end to do that. So I think that would definitely happen. Some other things that I heard about, you know, people are really looking for, you know, geographically based security so they can have different profiles when they're home and so on. You know, that stuff kind of scares me. You know, GPS can be spoofed and all that. So I hope none of that happens. iMessage previews and like the rich content stuff in iMessage, people are comparing iMessage to things like, let's say, Slack, which can preview a whole lot of things. But that just reminds me of like HTML email and tracking beacons and all of that. Do we really want that in a IAM protocol that's meant to be encrypted end-to-end? You know, do we really want to be able to trigger web content on the other people's computer? Well, I'm sure I want to trigger it on other people's computer. That really doesn't worry me. It's the other way around. And the other one that I heard about was, you know, what if Apple provided VPN for all of their users? So when you're on untrusted Wi-Fi, everyone gets VPN. That might sound good, but Apple wants to see less of your data, not more.
Yeah, agreed.
So I think it would be way more likely to continue pushing SSL TLS adoption in applications as they've been also doing with IPv6 adoption in applications. I think it's way more likely that Apple would force everything on a phone to eventually be encrypted than it would be for them to do VPN on their own systems and then see all of your traffic, which would mean they would have to give it to other people who request it. So
yeah. Well, I think that's about all we have time for. Guillaume, it will be very interesting to see what we get and what we don't get at WWDC next week. And it was a pleasure, as always, having you on.
Thank you very much for having me.
So now, if people wanted to talk more Apple-y stuff with you or something along those lines, what would be the best way for people to find maybe your writing or get a hold of you?
So on Twitter, Geppetto42. G-E-P-E-T-O. I know it's supposed to be spelled with two P's and two T's and blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Binaryfactory.ca. That's where my blog that I never update is. And if you're interested in securing your iOS devices, if you look at the Rapid7 community website, I have a pretty good write-up up there. And I guess we can put the link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll toss that in there. And you can always find me at Jay Sicoli on Twitter. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, feedback, or anything along those lines, you can find the show Twitter at SFS Podcast. Show notes will be up at southernfriedsecurity.com/181. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. So good night.